It is time. We love this time. It's Arthur Schwartz, the food bench, back for another helping. Haha. Hey, I like that. Wasn't that clever? Hi, Arthur.
I did too.
Okay.
Hi. Hi, everybody. So sad news. A very, very, very nice man named Tom Valenti, a chef who I haven't seen in many, many years, but I knew about, passed away this week, 67. They have not said what he died of, except a short illness. But Tom appears in my book, New York City Food, because he changed the trajectory of food, at least here in New York. And, you know, whatever New York does, eventually gets out there in the rest of the country, or whatever, I should say, California does also gets out there. Anyway, actually, Tom is credited with us breaking away from a California style of restaurant. This is the early 1980s when I called it, at that time I was a restaurant critic, which is how I was so aware of Tom Valenti. But at that point, New York was obsessed with what I like to call grill it and garnish it school of cuisine. And this and they also labeled it California cuisine, which basically meant you didn't need to have any culinary skills, well, except to grill something and maybe make wonderful fried potatoes. Because the one dish that I remember that sort of everybody craved, and I couldn't believe it, that they were going out to eat and spending a lot of money on this, was basically grilled chicken with French fries and a salad. So anyway, that was California cuisine, or the grill it and garnish it school of cookery. Tom, on the other hand, was asked, actually, by my friend Roseanne Gold, who was then a restaurant consultant and had as a client a Greek diner owner who wanted to break out into the white tablecloth restaurant business. And Roseanne was the consultant and hired Tom and said, you know, it's a Greek restaurant, or a Greek / Mediterranean themed restaurant. You should probably do something unusual that we haven't seen before, like maybe braised meat. So, of course, because nobody made braised meat then. I also remember, by the way, this was the era where mashed potatoes finally made it onto restaurant menus, always considered a home thing and not a restaurant thing, unless you went to a fancy French restaurant that was, you know, pomme purée. In any case, Roseanne said, you know, come up with something for this Greek place. So Tom came up with lamb shanks, appropriately for a Greek, you know, themed restaurant. And he made these fabulous, fabulous braised lamb shanks. The recipe for which, by the way, is in my book, Arthur Schwartz's New York City Food. I'm going to talk a bit about my book today because Tom's death, which I found very sad. And he, by the way, got a wonderful obituary in the New York Times, pointing out that he was the guy who braised meat back. And besides the lamb shanks, by the way, a number of years later, when he was cooking in another restaurant, he brought back short ribs. Now, you can go to Daniel Boulud these days, you know, like the most expensive French restaurant in Manhattan, and you can get, you know, for $100 or so, you can get braised short ribs. But back in 1980, whatever, there was really nothing like that on a menu. But as I said, the grill it and garnish it school of cookery. Now, by the way, in honor of Tom, I was going to make the lamb shanks, but you know, it's a restaurant recipe. So if you want to go to the fuss of doing this, it has a lot of ingredients. It calls for veal demi-glace, which you can buy, I guess, in a good market, but it's an expensive item too. Anyway, these lamb shanks glorified so much that you could get a good price for them, and they really were fabulous. But you know, Tom's little obit sort of thing, well, not obit, the little tribute I wrote to him in my book, New York City Food, brought me back to my book, which I had not really read in a long, long time. Every once in a while, somebody will ask me for a recipe that's in the book, and I'll refer them to my book. But it's still in print, shocked to say. It was published originally in hardcover in 2004, 22 years ago. And then it was republished a year or two later with a soft cover. But to say, I'll tell you, the soft cover is identical to the hardcover, except for the cover. And I think they thought this was very New York-y. The second cover mimics the colors and design of the old yellow cabs in New York, which are still around, but they don't look the same. Anyway, the cover of the book has a picture of me. I have to say this book won a great honor. It was the book of the year must have been 2004. Cited as the best book of the year by the International Association of Culinary Professionals, the IACP, which is not the Beard Awards, but better awards, I always think. I'm very proud of that because this book was a lot of love. A work of a lot of love, and includes people always say it's a cookbook, but in fact it's a history book. It's the history of New York City told through food, and I'm reading it myself again and enjoying it and learning stuff that I've forgotten.
So interruption, 4 years ago I found that book sitting at the Bargain Barn, actually. And I thought, I'll take that. So I took it home and relished it. And it is everything that you say it is, even though you wrote it. But a year or so ago, I was looking for a recipe and found something that a friend was also looking for. And I lent it to her because I'm very bad at taking pictures of recipes with my camera. Anyway, I lent her the book. I have yet to see it back, but she has gotten such amazing pleasure out of it. Yeah, it's great. It's.
I do have a stash of New York City food.
Fabulous.
So-called paperback, the soft cover.
It's pretty.
I don't know what recipe it was, but you know there are things in here I'd forgotten. For instance, if you go into a New York City bake, well, you know, everything has changed, so I can't say this is a patent thing. But used to be, if you went into a New York City bakery and asked for a strawberry shortcake, you got two layers of sponge cake or yellow cake filled with whipped cream, whole strawberries, iced with more whipped cream and garnished with more strawberries. And that was our version of strawberry shortcake. Well, what I'd forgotten is this was, in fact, the strawberry shortcake from a famous, 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 famous place called Lindy's. You know about Lindy's? Does anybody out there remember Lindy's? Go watch the movie Guys and Dolls with, you're not going to see, unless somebody in your neighborhood revives it as a musical. But the movie starring Marlon Brando and Frank Sinatra is a Damon Runyon story. And a lot of it takes place in a restaurant they call in the movie Mindy's. But of course, it was Lindy's. And the big bet at the beginning of the movie, because the Frank Sinatra character runs gambling crap games.
Nice.
And Marlon Brando, who's a big-time gambler, they bet on, does Mindy sell more cheesecake or apple strudel? That's the big bet. But it's Mindy's. And by the way, Mindy's, otherwise known as Lindy's, was famous for cheesecake. At the same time, by the way, that other New York restaurants were famous for cheesecake, but some of the cheesecakes there is still a Lindy's cheesecake you can buy frozen in the supermarket. I don't know where, but I know it's still out there. Anyway, So this strawberry shortcake, which was in fact originally from Lindy's, was copied by a friend of mine who's sort of long deceased. May she rest in peace, Barbara Kafka. Barbara Kafka was the main influence on New York food in the 80s and into the 90s. She opened, for instance, the first store that sold only American ingredients. It was built for its time, so it failed. But it was called, what was it called? I'll think of it. Anyway, Star Spangled Food, it was called. Anyway, Barbara was a consultant, a food consultant and restaurant consultant. And she was given the chore of planning a restaurant for the bottom of the CBS building, Black Rock, as they call it. And William Paley was still the head of Black Rock. So she had to present menu items to William Paley. And one day she wheeled in this strawberry shortcake, which, as I said, is just a layer cake with cream and strawberries. By the way, I can buy that in my neighborhood. It's one of the favorite items at a bakery in my neighborhood. They still make it exactly like that, except they leave out the final garnish, which is strawberry syrup that you drizzle it over. Anyway, William Paley was opening this restaurant in Black Rock, and it was originally called the American Deli. And Barbara liked the word deli because she knew that William Paley was secretly Jewish and that he would relate to the word deli. But in fact, he didn't relate to the word deli, and the restaurant became the American Charcuterie, which basically means the American Deli. Anyway, that cake became famous again as served at the Charcuterie in the CBS building. But there it is. It was a New York invention. Nobody in the South, for instance, makes strawberry shortcake like that. Everybody else in America makes a biscuit, and tops it with strawberries, usually macerated with sugar and a lot of whipped cream. I want one right now. So that, by the way, I don't make that recipe. There are a lot of recipes in New York City food that I don't make or wouldn't make, because they're historic documents, not so much workable recipes, but I do have a lot of workable recipes that are doable. And one of them, there's so many. Here's one. This came up recently. I was very sad to learn this person who was in their 50s had never heard of Patricia Murphy's. Do you ever hear Patricia Murphy's, Jill?
Sounds vaguely familiar.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of history with Patricia Murphy's because my parents liked it. And one of the things they liked about it was very Gentile. That was an exotic experience for us, going to Patricia Murphy's, where you sat at a table, and as soon as you sat down, young ladies dressed in gingham dresses, holding baskets lined with beautiful white napkins, went around and served hot popovers. And on the table was apple butter, cottage cheese, and pickled watermelon rind. There may have been other things, but that's all I remember as a boy. And you ate your pop and butter. I'm sure there was butter. And you ate your hot popovers with the apple butter, any combination of those that you liked. And that was where I first learned about, I must say, pickled watermelon rind, which later on I became very enamored of because I had a neighbor in Connecticut who made it for me all the time. Anyway, Patricia Murphy opened a restaurant here in Brooklyn on Henry Street, called Patricia Murphy's Candlelight Restaurant. And she was not a rich girl. She was a waitress, and she wanted to start her own place. And it turns out she got the rent paid, and she got the tables and chairs, but she didn't have any money left for electricity to turn the electric on. So, and she needed to open to make some money. So she set all the tables with candlesticks, and you went and you ate by candlelight, which turned out to be a great attraction. So she actually called it Patricia Murphy's Candlelight Restaurant. And I only went to the original one maybe once or twice with my grandparents, who liked it a lot. But where we would go was on Long Island. There was a Patricia Murphy's. And then Patricia had a falling out with her sister. And Now I'm forgetting the sister's name, but it'll come back to me in a second. And the sister broke off from her and opened a clone restaurant in on Northern Boulevard in Manhasset, and Lorraine Murphy. And we went there a few times too. My father and mother really loved this place. I mean, what did you eat there? Who remembers except the popovers? But I guess the other thing you ate there was what we would have considered Gentile food, like roast beef. Not that we didn't eat roast beef. But anyway, Patricia Murphy's popovers is a great recipe. It's not really much different than other recipes. I have to say that there is one you can find on the internet. Do I have it? A version here? I don't think so. But there is a version where you start them in a cold oven. People seem to like that version a lot. Anyway, there are a lot of things in here that we've forgotten, but also a lot of things that people ask me about, like chicken a la king. Do you ever make chicken a la king? I do sometimes. I have a recipe
No.
of that in here. No. And then there's some of
No, Marshall, that was a total Marshall, you know? That's the sort of thing that he would just love.
Anyway, I see Lindy's cheesecake is in my book, but the one that the cheesecake, and there's also Junior's cheesecake is in this book. Got to say, Junior's cheesecake is not the same as it used to be if you buy it, because of course now they make them by the hundreds of thousands and they're sold all over the place. And even if you go to Junior's downtown Brooklyn and you get a fresh one, it's still not as good, I have to say, as making your own. Now, the real Junior's cheesecake comes on a thin layer of sponge cake, but I make it without the sponge cake. It's just as delicious without the sponge cake, and then it's very easy to do. Now, New York cheesecake is, I mean, even in Iowa, they call it New York cheesecake. It's a cream cheesecake, and it probably was developed in New York and because it has a very, it's ancestors are, I would say, the cheesecakes made in Eastern Europe. And of course, when the Eastern European Jews came at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th century, they discovered they could buy cream cheese to make their cheesecake. And hence the New York cheesecake made with cream cheese. I got to say, I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I recently made a cheesecake custard using cottage cheese, and it was extremely creamy. I'm going to do that again soon. Now, what I love about my book, besides that I did put a lot of my heart and hard work into it, is that it contains good number of images, postcard images that I've collected. I have enormous collection of New York City restaurant postcards, including one of a Chinese restaurant that I have a chandelier in my dining room, and it looks like it's gilded palm leaves, so the whole thing looks like a palm, like the top of a palm tree coming down from the ceiling. Anyway, I found a Chinese restaurant postcard from Brooklyn that had a whole row of these chandeliers hanging down the middle of the restaurant. I only wish I could find the couple of crystals. So there were more of these, and they come with a very particular crystal hanging from all these gilded palm leaves. And I can't seem to find any replacement crystals for it, but I still enjoy it. And nobody notices missing crystals except me, gotta say. Pickles. I'm only saying pickles because there's a good shot of pickles on the cover of the book. And I'm very particular about pickles because my grandfather made pickles for a living at one point in his life. And late in his life, he made pickles for the family and friends. I do remember going, in the summer, at the end of the summer, when he and they were new pickles. I just saw a video about this. After just a few days of lactic fermentation, the cucumbers get slightly pickled. They're green still, but they're pickled a little bit. We call those new pickles. Then we have the ones that have been a little longer, and they may have turned a little color, but they're half sours. And then it takes a longer time to get full sour. So pickles are a big deal thing in Brooklyn and in New York, and I think everywhere these days. And certainly an iconic, the kosher dill pickle. And I have my grandfather's recipe in the book, too. A lot of nostalgia going on here. You know, Tom Pawlenty brought up incredible nostalgia. He worked in a restaurant called Allison on Dominic. Allison?
Right.
Well, anyway, it was owned by a woman named Allison. And it was downtown. And it was maybe the snobbiest restaurant I've ever been to, except that Tom Pawlenty's food was very down to earth. Eventually, he moved to the Upper West Side and opened a restaurant called West, or O-E-S-T, spelled. And Gail Green at the time said he finally brought civilization to the Upper West Side. he was a great guy. Anyway, we move on.
Do you have any great plans for the week ahead?
Plans for the week ahead. I have a cooking
great
plan.
Plan.
I'm going to make a lasagna this week. Because I finally found a source for just plain lasagna sheets that aren't these no-boil lasagna sheets. They're real traditional lasagna sheets. And they were cheap, too. And I already have a nice ragu in the freezer. And I haven't decided whether this is going to be a lasagna with bechamel and meat ragu and a lot of Parmigiano, or with ricotta, also a lot of Parmigiano. I'll figure it out when I do it. But hard to find these. And where it's from is interesting. I know it's from a pasta artisanal, I would say, handmade pasta laboratory, they say in Italian, that's maybe a half an hour away at the most from where I used to have my cooking school. And in those days, I knew about this place, and every once in a while, somebody would serve pasta from this place. But now I'm buying it in Brooklyn. That's one project for the week, my food project for the week.
We will look forward to your report on your food project. The pasta place that I knew that had terrific pasta, and I believe you could get lasagna sheets from, was on 9th Avenue in the 40s. Do you know what I'm talking
about?
Yeah,
but I'd have to go to 9th Avenue. Oh, I know which one you mean, but is it there still? Who knows?
Oh, I have no idea, but I just.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the point is, I get this superb pasta that I can buy in my neighborhood.
Of course.
I don't have to schlep to 9th Avenue. Also, Raffetto's, it is sold in my supermarket even, but I find Raffetto's pasta too heavy for me. I made the pappardelle and with a fish sauce, with a very chunky sauce with olives and capers and some fish. Oregano, tomatoes, fresh Campari tomatoes. It was very good, I got to say. And it worked well with the pappardelle. I didn't want to put meat on the pappardelle, but they're very good for any kind of heavier, meaty sauce even. You wouldn't use pappardelle in a smooth sauce. But anyway, I'll report.
We'll Cat decide.
Over, I think, on Tuesday night or Wednesday night. So I'm so strict about about eating Passover food, but I don't know, it doesn't feel right to make lasagna in the middle of Passover.
You got, I think, 2 days. Totally depends on family tradition, it says, and when you start, and of course where you are, because the time changes. But boys and girls, thank you very much. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.